You're listening to OU Podcasts.
Guys, welcome to the Operation Ultra podcast, episode number 19. I'm Dustin.
And this is Rachel.
And we appreciate you joining us again this week. I think we got a great episode lined up. This week is a little bit about the ladies and not only how women can get involved with trail running, but also things they might need to keep in mind.
Sure, but I think a lot of what we talk about is relevant to both guys and gals. So guys, don't leave the episode. We've got something for you too.
And before we get started, one thing we did want to mention is in the South, you can't go without mentioning the weather in the summer. Now, normally this means temperatures during the day in excess of 100 degrees and high humidity and just overall nastiness. But this year, it seems like we've been especially blessed with some really nice, relatively cool weather. At least here in Arkansas, this past week, the temperatures have been in the 70s. It hasn't really gotten all that hot this year. And I think it's made for great running weather all throughout our listening region, all throughout the Southeast.
Yeah, so we hope you guys are out there and enjoying that and getting in some good miles. Meanwhile, Dustin and I have been doing a little bit different stuff. Dustin, you have been training for marathon, so you've kicked up intensity, I guess. But you've approached your training in a little bit different way. So tell us a little bit how that's going.
Yeah, well, I'm working with a friend of mine, Billy. He's kind of put a schedule together for me. And I'm following his schedule relatively closely. I had a little bit of a setback with some weirdness last week with having a kind of a down day on training and taking a cutback week. But basically, I've just been trying to get my mileage back up a little bit and focus on road running. So hopefully I'll be putting a nice road marathon out there in the fall. So I'm looking forward to that. And I guess finally feeling like I get the marathon distance behind me before I move back up in distance again. So while I've been focusing on the roads specifically for the past few weeks, you've been a little bit out of running.
Yeah, unfortunately I have. I've had a little bit of an overuse injury, had some peroneal tendonitis, and that was mainly due to switching to some new shoes too soon. And then once I started getting pain issues, switching back to some dead shoes and upping mileage, it was perfect storm for an injury like that. I actually got to the point where I couldn't walk on it and had to wear a boot for about a week. And once I was off of it for a while, it healed. It seems to be doing better. And I'm actually slowly working my way back into my miles, but not quite where I should be on schedule, which is always a little bit almost puts you in panic mode as an ultra runner when you've got a race on the calendar. But thankfully, I'm early enough in my training schedule. I'm not quite worried about it yet. Hopefully, we'll get the injury and stuff out of the way early on in training and closer to race, not have any bumps to deal with.
Yeah, if you were to have an injury or a setback like this, this early in your training cycle is the time to have it. So hopefully things kind of clear up and we don't see any flare-ups of that later on. I'll make sure we focus on making smart decisions on your training. And you seem to be doing a great job of that anyway. Taking the time off rather than pushing it was a really good decision. And also, we want to give a shout out to our previous podcast interviewee, Allison Venti. Allison recently won the Badwater 135-mile race from the desert to the top of Mount Whitney. As you recall, she set a blistering fast time at the Keys 100 and obviously carried that training pretty dang well over to Badwater. So congratulations, Allison. And we kind of knew you had it in you, and I look forward to seeing what else you can do. All right, so one of the things that Rachel and I are fans of is Rock Creek Running and the number of races that the Wild Trail organization in partnership with Rock Creek puts together. In the Chattanooga area, they've just really got something great there, and we've enjoyed the races we've seen there, but also getting to hear about them like the Thunder Rock 100. Well, Rock Creek is actually starting a new women-specific trail running summit later this month, and we get to talk to Erin Hannon about that and see what they've got in store.
And Erin is kind of the driving force behind this women's trail running summit, which is August 22nd through 24th. 30 women will come together in the Chattanooga area from 7 states across the Southeast region. Erin's a trail runner herself. She recently did the Chattanooga Mountain Stage Race. She penned a great article for Rock Creek's website specifically about women's trail safety, and we get a chance to talk to her a little bit about that. We're really interested in what you guys have going on with the Women's Trail Running Summit. Very unique idea, and I think very much needed idea. And that's coming up in August, and it's near the Chattanooga area, so not too far from where you are in Georgia. Tell us a little bit about what the idea is behind it and kind of what that weekend will look like.
Yeah, sure. So the whole idea of the weekend was to create an event that's by women. So the whole event was designed by women, myself, a couple of women that are involved with Rock Creek, and some of the girls on the Rock Creek race team. And the whole idea was to get more women involved in trail running. So a lot of the time, you show up at these races, and I know just from the races that I've done, and especially in the Southeast, I can't necessarily speak for all the country, but, you know, you're sitting around at the finish line, and you're looking at who's coming across the line, and you're just seeing, you know, a lot of the guys are out there. So we're wondering, why are there fewer women at these trail races? So I sat down with Dawson Wheeler. He's the one of the co-owners of Rock Creek up in Chattanooga. They're an outdoor retailer. And, you know, we kind of brainstormed a little bit about this idea, you know, what might be inhibiting women from getting on the trails. But of course, what it came down to is that, you know, we can't necessarily speak for all women. Just, you know, sitting around in the office in Chattanooga, we can't really say why women aren't getting out on the trails. So the idea was, could we build this event where, you know, we get together a bunch of women that are already active in trail running and ask them what motivated them to get into trail running and what, if any, boundaries did they experience when they were getting involved in trail running? So the idea of the event was kind of just, can we figure out all of these things and, you know, build that feedback into future races and events and hope that this is kind of a perpetual idea to try and get more women involved in trail running and even the field a little bit out there. So the event will take place August 22nd to 24th. So it's a, I guess, almost three-day event. The participants will show up on Friday evening. We'll have a casual run while everybody's checking in and getting sorted out. And that night we'll have an introductory dinner, kind of get some icebreakers going and whatnot. But the real day begins on Saturday. So we have a whole bunch of activities planned, some really great things that range from, you know, yoga and stand-up paddleboarding and swimming in the Ocoee to obviously going on some trail runs. There's some really great trails on the Ocoee up in Tennessee. And then the kind of main event of the whole thing is this big discussion that we're hoping to have on Saturday night. And the idea behind that discussion is to get feedback from, you know, all the women in attendance on, you know, the sorts of things that got them involved in trail running and the boundaries that they experienced. So that's kind of like the main highlight of the weekend, and we're hoping to break it into a couple different sessions and get all that information as much as we can while still having a good time and, you know, of course, enjoying the trails.
How long have you been running trails, and what was your transition to trail like?
So I mostly ran so I started running in seventh grade, and I did mostly cross country and track when I was, you know, in middle school and then into high school and a little bit in college. So most of my experience was either on the road or on the track, or on the cross country course, of course. But I kind of played around a little bit on the trails. Where I grew up in New Jersey, there's this place called Watchung Reservation that has some pretty neat trails. So that was kind of my first experience with trail running, but I never really knew anything about trail races. I kind of just did it as a chance to get off the roads and experience something a little different, mixing it in with my other training. So then it wasn't until after college when I moved down to Atlanta for grad school at Georgia Tech. And I kind of ventured into some of the trails in North Georgia and was just blown away by how beautiful it is. I mean, there's so many trails down here that I think a lot of people don't know about between, you know, the Appalachian Trail, the Bartram Trail, the Benton McKay Trail, the Duncan Ridge Trail, and all the little smaller trails as well connecting these, and all the state parks and everything. It's just so beautiful. There's so many opportunities, and it's, you know, time just passes. You have to go out for a 20-mile run on the road, and you're wondering how you're going to get through it, bringing your iPod along. But then you hit the trails, and it's like a completely different game. You know, you don't even have to bring an iPod because there's so much going on around you that it's just so distracting, and, you know, you're just out there enjoying the time in the mountains, or at least that's the way that I see it. So my transition kind of went in that direction. I can't say that personally I exhibited too many serious boundaries because I kind of just, like, dove after it. But I could certainly see where there are a lot of, you know, risks that women see that are involved in trail running. I think one of the biggest ones that, you know, a lot of us talk about all the time is the issue of safety. So, you know, venturing onto these trails by yourself, you know, is kind of an intimidating factor. And, you know, if you're, it's a little bit harder to find people to go run a couple hours on a trail somewhere in North Georgia. So, you know, that's always a factor. But of course, not only running with other people, but there are a lot of things that you can do just yourself to make sure that you're safe. And, you know, maybe that's something that we'd like to discuss during this weekend, you know, and try and brainstorm a list of things that we recommend for either beginner trail runners or even experienced trail runners to keep in mind to ensure their safety so that, you know, you don't have to be so concerned where you're getting onto the trail.
And to that end, you wrote a nice article for Rock Creek's website that listed five ways to stay safe on the trails, planning ahead, letting someone know where you are, being prepared, knowing the dangers of where you're going and staying on the trails. Does that cover the gamut of safety features, or are there other things?
Yeah, that certainly doesn't cover it all. You know, there's always going to be surprises that pop up. But I think it does cover some of the big points. You know, when you go out onto the trail, you always hear these horror stories about, you know, I mean, the guy who ventured into the canyon, the climber, and, you know, got stuck, his arm got stuck and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, there were things that you can do leading up to events like this that kind of ensure your safety a little bit more. Sure, you're not going to prevent everything, but if somebody knows where to find you, you know, it can kind of eliminate some of the risk that's involved there. So that's why I always say that that's a big thing. But on the flip side, not sharing on Facebook to the whole world, you know, I'm going to be at X parking lot for X amount of time, and then it's a little bit too public. So I don't know. I think it's a you know, social media and everything is such a fantastic tool, but we do have to be careful, you know, when we use social media and, you know, to alert people of where we're going to be, but not open to the big old public for anybody to find out. But so I think that's a major component. But even going beyond that, I think there are things that are unavoidable, such as when you're getting on the trail, you know, twisting an ankle on a root or a rock might happen. And for me, it happened a lot, especially when I was first getting into trail running. And I guess there's really no surefire way to prevent any of that other than just not running on the trails. But that's not, you know, necessarily the solution. I think for me, it just took a while to get used to the trails. And, you know, you have to take your time and know where you're going and also have, you know, a safety backup plan. If you get injured badly enough, what is your quickest way out? So knowing the area where you're running and knowing how you can get help quickest, you know, is always an important factor. I think a lot of people are very sure to carry their phone or some sort of communication with them. But of course, you can't always rely on your phone to have service in a lot of these areas. So I think that's sometimes a little scary for people to be out of contact with the public or with anybody that might be able to come and help you. So that's kind of, I guess, an issue that, again, is unavoidable. But, you know, you take with it the risks and try and prepare for them as much as you can. So in that sense, you know, I always take my phone with me, but I, you know, try to turn it to the airplane mode so that I'm not killing battery out there while it's searching for service. And then, God forbid, I got in an accident or, you know, had a severe enough injury where I needed somebody to come help me. Maybe I could find signal somewhere or make it out to a road nearby and be able to make a phone call. So, you know, there's these little things. Surely that list does not at all cover everything that's going to keep you safe. But that was kind of the list of things that came to mind for me immediately. But surely, like I said, hopefully with this weekend, the Rock Creek Women's Trail Running Summit, we'll be able to discuss some of these items and see what other people add to that list and see if anybody else has any tips to share with women or really anybody in general who's getting into trail running and how we can make it the most safe transition as possible.
You hit the nail on the head. A lot of women, the barrier is safety and feeling safe. And honestly, the first few times you venture out there, it's best to be with somebody else because you're not familiar with the trail or the area, or anytime you hit a new trail, it's always kind of smart to have somebody there with you if that's possible. And I think with more and more women getting into the sport, that is possible to bring somebody along, and everyone's always willing to share their their enthusiasm of the trail. But, you know, people tend to ask me when they find out that I run trails and that I run by myself a lot of times, they say, aren't you scared? And honestly, I feel safer on the trail than I do on a busy road in the downtown area. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you probably are safer out there. But in all the time that you've spent on the trail, which you've spent a lot of time on the trail, have you had any weird, encounters with wildlife?
I've had a couple of run-ins. You know, every now and then you are in the wild, so you're going to see animals. I've, you know, had a run-in with copperhead, with a rattlesnake, and of course, those are scary. I've seen a bear on the trail, you know, all these things. But I think for the most part, as long as you're cautious and aware of your surroundings, you can save yourself a lot of trouble, obviously. A lot of the things, like, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are aware, black bears are the most common type of bear here in the Southeast. And they're generally afraid of you. They don't want you to be in their way, and you don't want to be in their way, obviously. So if you come up on a black bear, you're kind of just hoping to make a lot of noise, and they'll go their way, you go your way, and nobody really ends up getting hurt. Surely it's possible that there's a trail injury, you know, with either a bear or a snake or whatever. But again, being aware of your surroundings is definitely what's key to it.
Before you become a trail runner, you just assume that you're going to go out on the trail and see wildlife, threatening wildlife, every time you're out there. And that's really not the case. You really get out there and you might see a snake every once in a while. You might see a skunk or a raccoon or something, but it's really not as wild as what you would assume.
Right. I definitely agree. And I think, you know, it's a good reminder to never really let down your guard. I think as you do get more experience, sometimes you think that, you know, you can just throw caution to the wind. You always do need to be cautious for sure. But I think, as you mentioned before, the trails are relatively safe. You hear these kind of sensationalized stories sometimes about, somebody wandered off onto the trail and either got lost or, you know, got harmed in one way or another. The reason that these are making news is because they're so rare. Meanwhile, you know, you can be in a city and you can get hit by a car running on, you know, your regular running route on the sidewalk or, you know, crossing a street or whatever. So there are so many risks involved with, you know, just living day-to-day life that it's hard to parse that out from the risk that is different on the trail. So I don't think it's necessarily a great reason to say it's too dangerous to go on the trail. Definitely be cautious about going onto trails and know your surroundings, but surely understand that, you know, the trails are relatively safe.
We've never seen a bear. We trail run quite often in an area that has some black bear activity, and I've never seen one. Rachel's never seen one either.
Right.
Although I joke all the time that Rachel sees all the wildlife that I don't, like wild turkeys and things like that I just never notice or never see.
Right,
so,
right.
And generally, I think you're right. Those occurrences on the road are much more frequent than the scary situations that might occur out on the trail. So
absolutely.
Getting lost, is that the biggest concern being out there?
I mean, I think for me personally, it ends up being somewhat of a concern. I know anytime I come to a situation where I think I might be lost, you almost go into panic mode. And it's very natural to do that. You know, when you're out in the middle of, you know, you're in the woods and maybe you haven't seen someone for a while and you start to wonder, like, how am I going to find somebody? But I think it's so important in that type of situation to just calm down and realize that you're in a fairly safe environment and you'll probably be able to find your way just fine, especially if you just have to retrace your steps. But it's so easy to fall into that panic mode because we're so used to being surrounded by people and cars and technology and everything all the time that kind of is a safety net for us to fall back on. If you are running down the road in Atlanta, for instance, and you sprain your ankle pretty bad and you're sitting on the side of the road, chances are somebody's right there to pull over on the side of the road and help you. But if you're on the trail, it's a little bit more, it's a little bit scarier of a situation because you're not around somebody all the time. So I think that seems like such a scary situation, but you just need to, you know, calm down and assess the situation and kind of go from there. Not that long ago, I was somewhat lost on a trail. It was actually a Forest Service road over in Lake Russell in North Georgia. And I just remember absolutely panicking. And then after retracing my steps, kind of figuring out where I was and taking another shot in another direction, I realized I was like literally about 10 minutes from the car. So it ends up just being one of these situations where, you know, my emotions got the best of me and all I needed to do was take a deep breath and know that, you know, everything's going to be fine. And I made it back to the car just fine. So I think, you know, just keeping that in mind that, you know, all you have to do is calm down and you'll figure it out. And when you're starting to freak out a little bit, look around and enjoy the beautiful surroundings.
That's right. And really nowadays with a lot of the trails, you can find trail maps online. And there's even apps that can, like the Every Trails app that I know the Rock Creek guys mm-hmm. use quite often, that can show you whether or not you're on trail or how to get back on trail. And those are really important to make sure you kind of know where you are and know what markings you're looking for, what turns you might need to take, et cetera.
Right. And I have so many resources, and with the internet, it's so easy to find information on these trails. A lot of the trails that I run, for the most part, like if I'm on the Appalachian Trail, obviously that's such a well-marked trail, and, you know, fairly well-maintained and, really, well-paved, if you will. Obviously it's not paved, but there's so many people traveling on it that it's really hard to get lost on a trail like that, or even the Bartram Trail up in North Georgia and whatnot. But certainly there are some trails that are a little bit more difficult to find and, you know, sort out and make sure that you're going the right way. But like you said, there are so many resources online, the Every Trail and Routes Rated is another resource that's online. And I think they have a mobile app now. And basically you can, you know, insert a city name and they'll come up with all these different trail suggestions or whatever other activity you're looking to do. And they'll come up with all these suggestions, and then they have both, you know, trail descriptions and user reviews. So people who have been on these trails might write a little blurb of, you know, some of the suggestions, you know, whether there was a difficult turn, not very clearly marked and whatnot. But obviously beyond that resource, there's so many other resources out there on the internet. And nothing can really replace a good old-fashioned map. I usually like to take a map with me if I'm going to be in an area that I'm, you know, not as familiar with. If I know that it's just going to be a straight out and back, I might be a little less likely to take a map with me. Like on the AT, I don't have a paper map of that specifically, but I have those National Geographic maps that are, they're like waterproof maps. And I think those are so great because they show so many of the trails, but you can also see Forest Service roads. And I think it's really important to know, you know, your access points. If you're running along a trail and you do need to get to a road for one reason or another, it's good to know those things. And sometimes you can't plan for that. You know, if you're 15 miles out on a trail and, you know, you need to get to a road for one reason or another, if you don't have that map and you're not that familiar with the surrounding, it's going to be much more difficult. So either, you know, be familiar with the surrounding ahead of time or just bring that paper mat. You know, it's not too heavy to carry along, especially if you got one of those nifty packs.
And you're surrounded by quite a lot of trails. Do you have a favorite one?
I really like the Bartram Trail. I don't think too many people, I don't see a lot of people up there all the time, but there's just some really great areas along the trail. It's a pretty wide trail, so it doesn't get too terribly overgrown in the summer. Some of the trails, you know, they get a lot of briar overgrowth or poison ivy, poison oak, and whatnot. But the Bartram Trail is pretty clear, and one of my favorite places along the Bartram Trail is Raven Bald, and that's up north Georgia, right outside of Clayton, Georgia. And it's just absolutely beautiful. There's a big tower up there, an old, I don't know if you would call it a fire tower, but a big old stone tower with a 360-degree view. You can see North Carolina, Georgia, you know, really far and beautiful. So that's certainly one of my favorites.
The other great thing we've seen in recent years is more of the women-specific design stuff from running gear. Do you have any kind of favorite gear, maybe a pack or a shoe that you just can't live without?
I don't have anything in particular. I kind of like to try all different things. I have a Mountain Hardwear pack. I can't think of the name off the top of my head. But I do, you know, I often do carry like a race vest. It's not quite a full pack, but a race vest, just so that I can carry all the essentials with me. You know, I have food, water, extra water, sometimes my nap, and, you know, any other supplies. Sometimes I carry a small knife, you know, something like that. But other than that, you know, I don't have anything in particular that I think I need that's women's specific. But I know, you know, especially with the pack, sometimes the way that they sit is a lot different on women, and they are getting so much more conscious of, you know, these different designs. I think Ultimate Direction came out with a big line that I know a lot of people are a fan of. So, you know, I think not necessarily just women-specific designs, but every woman, as is every person, is so different that it's tough to say one thing is the be-all and end-all as far as equipment goes. But it is great to see that there are, you know, some really forward-thinking designers out there in these, you know, apparel companies.
Now, I can't quite gloss over that part. You mentioned knife. Is that more for safety or utility?
Utility for the most part. I mean, I'm not really ever concerned about having it with me from a safety perspective, but just for utility. And I don't even necessarily know what I would use it for. But, you know, if I had to cut my shoelace on something, I don't know. I can't necessarily think of a specific example, but
no, yeah. You never know when you might need. I mean, I think they can come in handy in many ways. What we've used and what I carry in my pack quite often is a little small Gerber, one of the mini Gerber multi-tools. It's come in handy so many times, whether it's even, you know, all the way down to repairing something on your pack or
exactly
pulling out. I've used it to dig out thorns and splinters or things like that.
Right. Or you have a little, you know, hanging toenail that's bothering you mid-run and you got to run 15 miles with it. I don't think you want to, you know.
Blister maintenance with a knife has got to be painful.
Yeah, it might be.
So registration for the summit in August, that's already sold out. Is that right?
Yeah, it was really shocking. You know, the way that we set up registration, we wanted to make sure that we covered not only a widespread of the region of the Southeast, we also wanted to cover a variety of age groups. So we sent out invitations in the first wave, just compiling not only race results, because we're not necessarily looking like who's the fastest and can we get the fastest group of women there. That's not at all what our interest is. We just wanted to make sure that we were well represented both regionally and age group wise. So, you know, we sent out these different invitations based on registrations from these different races, like, you know, looking at results and whatnot, some volunteer races, and just people that we know are very active in women's trail running. There are a bunch of organizations down here between Butts, the Alabama group, Guts, the Georgia group, some Chattanooga groups, trail running groups, and whatnot. So we kind of pulled from these different groups and got a pretty wide representation. And then we had, I think we got about 15 registrations out of that. And then we opened it up to the public on, I want to say June 10th was the date. And we actually sold the remaining out in 20 minutes. So it was really exciting just to see that many people were really interested in the idea of the summit. It's unfortunate that we couldn't let more women in. But of course, as this is a first year event, we're, you know, trying to keep it reasonably small so that we can still have intimate discussions. And we're, you know, of course, limited by the size of the lodge at this Camp Akoi where we'll be staying. So it was kind of a limitation in that sense. But hopefully we'll be able to include more women in future events because there's definitely the enthusiasm out there. I was shocked, pleasantly surprised for sure.
And you just finished doing the Chattanooga Mountain Stage Race, which is kind of known for its, I guess, close-knit atmosphere where after the races, the runners kind of get to kick back and talk. Were you able to get some kind of feedback during that event?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Got some feedback. You know, I've already been talking a lot to women, you know, once the idea of the summit got out there and it was on the internet and on Facebook and all that. I had a lot of women contacting me just asking for more information or just offering some opinions. The stage race was really awesome because in a lot of past events that I've gone to, you know, you're out there and like I said, you're wondering, where are the women at? I know there are some really great trail runners out there. Where are they at? Or some really great runners in general. Where are they at? But at the stage race, there were some amazing runners out there, some really fast chicks. And it was so inspiring to see them out there and not only to see how great they could perform, but see how great they could support the community in turn. So like you said, it is a really supportive kind of tight knit event. So you're hanging around there after the race and you're talking to these women. And then you just get a lot of feedback of why they got involved in trail running and, you know, how excited they are to continue. I'll just give a shout out. There's a girl named Beth Meadows, and she was outstanding at stage race. And she's really been, you know, up and coming in trail running. And I know she's still fairly new to it. I think she did more road running in the past. I don't have the specifics of her background. But, you know, she's just so excited to be out there. And she was asking me, like, when are we going to meet up to go on a trail run, you know? But, of course, she lives way out in Nashville, and I'm down in Atlanta. So, you know, the distance kind of limits a lot of connections in that sense. So hopefully, you know, with the summit, we'll be able to kind of build these mini networks. So the women in attendance are from all these different states. So hopefully they'll go in turn and be ambassadors to kind of build up, you know, a trail running community in Nashville or a bigger trail running community even in Atlanta, you know, around women, and kind of expand from there. Because like you said, it is always great, especially your first time out there, to have other people to run with. And I think that's something that kind of keeps some women from getting out on the trails. So if you have these quote unquote ambassadors getting out there and going into their community and saying like, come on, get on a trail with me, let's go try it out. I think that'll really kind of push the whole idea forward.
Well, we think the conference is a great idea, and we hope to see a lot more participation from women in trail running in the future. And I know they've definitely turned out in numbers in road racing, and it'll be great to see the same in trail running in the future. And hope that the conference that you guys are doing is kind of that first step of, at least regionally, getting them more involved and more aware of what the opportunities are for them.
Thank you. Yeah, we certainly hope so too.
You know, it's great. I've seen some articles on I Run Far. We'll try to find some links to those in the show notes about the lower participation rate of women in ultra running in particular. And I love something like this that seems to bring more diversity into trail running.
I think trail running has a great opportunity for women too. It's kind of levels the playing field. It's one of the few sports where you see women compete at or sometimes beyond the males in ability. Once you get to those longer distance, the women seem to have the ability to push through the pain and to endure right up there with the guys. So I love getting to see that and getting to see women bring in and showcase their talents right up against the guys. And in the interview, we mentioned some safety tips that Aaron had put together. We will link that in our show notes. But I have a few that I kind of wanted to highlight here on our podcast. Aaron talks a lot about planning ahead and knowing where you are and where you'll be. And I want to say, know where you are, know the fastest way out of where you are. She talks about side roads and forest service roads. But if there's a medical emergency or if the weather changes, you need to know how you're going to get out of there the quickest way possible. So always know your way out, but also know your way in. If there is an emergency, and not only if it's not your emergency, if someone else you come across has an emergency, you want to know the best way to get rescue workers in. Most rescue agencies will have a plan in place to get somebody off the trail, but you need to know where you are on the trail. Look for mile marker pins. Sometimes trails have those. Look for road crossings. Know the names of those roads or the numbers of the roads that you cross, and any kind of direction. If you have a landmark nearby, a lake or mountain, know where north is always so that you can help get medical workers to where you are.
And on the trail that we spend a lot of time on, the Lake Washita Vista Trail, they've got benches frequently throughout the trail. There's more than a dozen. And if you remember the number of the bench that you're on, they've got those cataloged and they can find you just through a simple landmark like that. So you can get lost. Just have a seat and wait for somebody.
Sure. Landmarks are incredibly important. And sometimes it's easy to just gloss over those as you focus on running the trails. But know that. Know how your trail is marked. Know the color of the blazes on your trail. And stick with those and make sure you don't get on a side trail. The second thing I want to point out also is she talks a little bit about telling people where you are, but being cautious and not putting that on social media. Have a safety person that you tell where you're going, and not only where you're going, but what route you plan on taking, and then stick to that route. If for some reason you have to change your route, make sure you let your safety contact know before you change your route. Always take extra fuel with you, even if it's just one gel. That may not be something that you ever have to use, but you may have come across another runner or hiker or somebody in trouble that needs that fuel. So it weighs 1 ounce. Carry it with you. You never know when you'll need it. Also know where your water sources are. It's best if you have some way to filter water, even if it's just an iodine tab that you can throw in a bottle in an emergency. But water is one thing that you don't want to run out of, especially in the warmer months of summer. One of my tips that is useful in most areas is if you come up to the trailhead at the start of your run, take a picture of the map at the trailhead. I have done that numerous times. And then when I'm out on the trail, I've had to pull up my phone and look at the picture to figure out where I am or what turn I should take. So always take a picture of that map at the trailhead. You never know when that will come in handy in emergency. And our last trail tip is always have a plastic bag. You never know when you're going to get rained on. If you have a cell phone out there, or if you have car keys but it has an electronic key fob, you don't want to get those things soaking wet. So it's great to have a plastic bag. You never know what you might use that for on the trail, but definitely it's great to have in case of rain to protect your electronics.
Those are some great tips. And really, it's all about being prepared, knowing what you could be getting yourself into and being prepared for at least, I guess, the more common bad situations you might find yourself in. So next, we're going to go to a fellow Arkansan, Allison Jumper from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Now, she's relatively new to the trail running scene, but she's already got a number of really strong finishes behind her, including 15th place female in Leadville in her 100-mile debut. So it's a pleasure to get to talk to her. She was actually our female winner at the Lovett 100K that we put on back in February.
Allison, how long have you been running, and specifically, how long have you been trail running?
I have run off and on most of my life. I think I did have my first 1 mile run when I was probably 6 or 7. But I didn't start trail running until probably around 2008.
You were a runner for a long time, obviously, then. So what distances did you stay at, and how did you end up making the transition to trail running and ultras?
Sure. Well, you know, through my childhood and high school and college, I never ran. I never ran competitively. It was just something to get some exercise in and to be social. So I didn't have any specific distance. My distance was, you know, going around the neighborhood or a lap or two around the park. Transitioning into trail running, I think I found my home there, just because I enjoy being out in the woods or in the desert or anywhere really off of pavement so much. And it just takes my mind away from the daily grind that we all go through.
So when was your first ultra marathon?
Maybe 2009.
It doesn't sound like you were super serious in marathon running or anything like that. So then what made you think, hey, you know, this running thing's kind of fun. I think I want to run even further.
Yeah, I fell into a group of friends and they were runners. And so I sort of picked back up my love of running, and most of them were on trail. So I just started running with them, and I just decided that I would give it a go. And I ran my first marathon maybe in 2007, and it was a road marathon. And it was fun, and I didn't have a whole lot of trouble completing that distance. So I thought, well, I'll just take it up to the next and try 50K.
So how was your first ultra experience? Was it a pretty steep learning curve, or did you kind of find your home?
Yeah, no, there was definitely a learning curve. And I think I still learn every time I go out there and do an event. But you know, nutrition and hydration were definitely two things that I had to kind of dial in and learn, you know, what works for me.
Looking back to when you did that first ultra in 2009, and you said, you know, nutrition, hydration is something that you had to learn. How did you go about it back then, and how does your strategy differ today?
Back then, not knowing anything, I didn't really eat until I felt like I was hungry, which I've learned since then it doesn't work for me. I think I get behind the ball if I do that, and I have a much worse experience out there as far as energy levels. Now I basically time myself and make sure that I'm eating every 40 or 45 minutes.
You eat frequently now. Do you do gels, or do you go to liquid calories, or how do you manage it?
I will often use like a honey stinger gummy type candy for convenience, but I also make a lot of my own too. I'll make a sort of an oatmeal peanut butter ball and smash those and just put them in my pack.
All right, so we've got to ask a little more. How do you make your oatmeal peanut butter balls?
Well, I just mix dried, you know, just quick oats with almond butter or peanut butter, a little bit of honey, and some chocolate chips, and roll them up in a ball and put them in the refrigerator.
We're going to have to make sure we post a recipe with the show notes for this one. So you ran your first 50K. It looks like it was the Sillamore 50K back in 2009. It looks like you might have waited till the following year and had you did the Full Moon 50K then. You've picked up your racing a lot more frequently, I guess, since then. Do you enjoy frequent racing, or do you kind of try to space it out and pick and choose your events carefully?
Both. I sign up for things so that I will continue to have something on the target and the train. Otherwise, I feel like I might get a little bit lazy. But I like to choose things too that are scenic. So oftentimes I'll try to pick something that I can travel for. I mean, I've done some races in California and Colorado and Oregon, just whatever kind of looks interesting.
With those to choose from, what do you think is the most scenic or the prettiest race you've run?
Oh, gosh. There's so many. I would say that the waterfall 50K I did in Oregon was very beautiful. And most of the scenery out in Colorado I really loved. So both of those, I would say, are notable.
Anything coming up on your race calendar or anything that you would like to have on your race calendar?
I am looking at a couple of races, maybe next fall, potentially the Run Rabbit Run in Steamboat Springs, or maybe Bighorn in Melbourne. So I'm just not sure.
Both of those look super scenic and fairly fairly mountainous. We've been up on parts of the Steamboat Springs course, and it's beautiful and very rugged and difficult. So yeah, that's definitely on my bucket list of ones I'd like to do. It looks like you've only done one 100 miler and you chose Leadville as your first?
That's correct.
Just to ask it nicely, what were you thinking?
Well, I do like the challenge of mountainous terrain, and I've been pretty lucky so far and haven't had a lot of ill effects from altitude. And I have several friends that have either done that run or have crewed for the run or paced. So I had a lot of experienced folks around me, so I decided, why not give it a shot?
So how was your experience there for your first 100?
I had a great experience. I was just so in tune, I guess, with just running by myself, and I enjoyed it. And I had not a real strict race strategy or anything, but basically just knew that if I kept moving forward that I would get to the finish line, and it worked out for me, and I had a really great time there.
You were pretty, I guess, smooth from a mood standpoint. You didn't have these wild ups and down swings like so many of us have?
No, I didn't. It was pretty steady, and, you know, like I said, I had a great group of friends and a great crew, and so when a new person would come on, then we would just pass the time of conversation or not. We would just run together in silence. So either way, it was just good to be surrounded by other, you know, other trail runners and good friends.
So you had done, it looks like you had done a number of 50Ks and some 50 milers leading up to that. I guess, how was your experience compared to what you had built it up to be?
I try to prepare for the worst. So, you know, the experience, in my opinion, was much better than I expected. I didn't really have any expectations going in that it would be a great run or that I wouldn't have ups and downs. And so by getting through that race without any major calamities, it was a huge, you know, success for me.
Leadville gets a little bit of a reputation as being rugged and difficult, I guess, given just its elevation. But is it right that it's maybe a little easier than it gets credit for in terms of terrain, at least? Not the elevation. Obviously, 11,000 feet is pretty high. But
yeah, I would say that it's not the most rugged terrain that I've run. No. So I don't know how it compares to, you know, some other mountain races, because I just haven't really done that many. But I didn't feel like the terrain surface itself was all that rugged.
Well, you did another race that I've got a little of experience in, the Tahoe 50. I did the 100 there in 2011.
Oh, yeah.
And you ran our Lovett race this year as well, but the difference in terrain from Tahoe and Leadville and other Western race courses compared to what we run in and on, I guess, in Arkansas and on the East Coast in general, it's just vastly different.
Yeah, it is. Everything about it is different, and I think a lot of that probably, I guess, stems from the geology. But even here in Northwest Arkansas, where I am, a lot of our trails are so rugged and technical, and you are constantly rock hopping, and, you know, in places you're running over very jagged, large rocks that are, you know, potential for ankle turners, it seems like, every time you place your foot down. So yeah, I think it is very different, and it's just something that if you travel much that you just adapt to over the different courses.
To me, it was just like running on just something super groomed. I mean, barely a rock on the course. It was just crushed granite throughout, and so easy to run on. And then I come out here and run on some of the trails we have, and I'm reminded why I prefer those on the West Coast. My ankles, at least, prefer those.
Exactly.
And you've run everything from the 50K, 50 mile, 100K, and 100 mile now. Do you have a favorite distance?
You know, I think probably right now the 50K is, and maybe that's just because I've done more of those and I'm fairly comfortable at that distance. But I did, you know, I was intrigued by the 100K that you guys put on, and I really enjoyed that distance. So I might try to find another one to see, you know, test my limits on that one again.
What was it in particular about the distance, or what did you like about that? How is it different from maybe a 50-mile or 100-mile?
Well, for me, I kind of used it as a test to see what I might be able to do solo and use it as a practice run to, you know, pack my drop bags and all that sort of thing, just to see what I can do out there totally, you know, unsupported. So I really like that about it. And then, like I said, I'm pretty comfortable with the 50K. I've only done 100, so it's a natural, you know, mid-distance to try to work out the kinks.
And one of the things that impressed me about your run at the Lovett race was you didn't start off the day kind of near the front of the pack. I mean, you ran fairly conservatively in the beginning, and I don't know whether you picked it up or not, but you know, every checkpoint you seemed to be higher up in the rankings. How did you do that? How did you run what appeared to be so evenly?
That is just something that I have tried to practice over time. I will almost always try to go out conservatively, just to make sure that I've got enough gas in the tank to get back to the finish line and do it comfortably. People say that sometimes that I, when I finish a race, it looks like that I haven't really exerted myself. And sometimes I think that might be true because I go out too conservatively. But at least I know that I'm going to make it to the end. So
I just remember you being so nonchalant and, you know, it seems carefree throughout the entire race. And in fact, you had the two lead guys, Max Frooms and Kelly Hutchins. They were actually asking where you were to make sure you weren't catching them. And you kept getting closer. They knew you were getting closer. And they were afraid you were going to get them.
Well, it would have been a fun day if I could have. But
if you'd had another 5 miles or so, you might have caught them. We should have extended the course a little bit or something. You mentioned doing it solo, and doing drop bags always is a little bit of a challenge. When you do that solo, is there anything that you don't pack that you wish you had, or things that you end up taking along and you find out that you never use?
No, I think what I learned from that was that it's better just to have everything that you think you might need available at every drop location. And that way you can pick and choose and you're not just wishing that, you know, you had something that wasn't there. The one thing I did on that run was I didn't pack my long sleeve shirt in the proper drop bag. So when I got to the turnaround, I was wishing I had a long sleeve with me, but I didn't.
Yeah, it got a little chilly there, especially mm-hmm. in certain parts of the course. So what's on your drop bag must-have list?
Plenty of food, and food and probably SCATs. And, you know, I've been real lucky with not having, feet or blister issues or anything like that. So, I would say those are my two mainstays for sure. And a headlamp.
It sounds so basic. I mean, whenever I pack a drop bag, it's got everything in it. I mean, I've got everything from blister repair kits to Body Glide to gels to drink mixes, flashlights, batteries, and it sounds like you just pare it down to the bare necessities, and yet that's plenty for you.
Yeah, for the most part, and maybe I'm just still lucky and haven't had too much trouble, but so far that's worked for me. Yeah, I mean, extra layer is always a good idea, and depending on the race that you're doing and the conditions that you're in. But certainly, you know, in the races out west and at longer distances, you have to be prepared for changing weather. So, you know, I didn't feel like that was such a concern at Lovett because I could kind of understand what the weather was going to do because you're not changing elevation like you would out there. But, you know, I think each race location is different in what you're going
to
need.
And talking to you, you start conservatively, you try to run evenly, but your placing's been fairly high. You know, I see it dotted with first through fifth and sixth all over the place. So do you find yourself late in the race getting competitive and kind of trying to pick off folks in front of you, or is this just a byproduct of whatever your nonchalant racing strategy and how that ends up?
You know, I can't really say. I think that pacing is something that a lot of people kind of have to work out over the years, and I have seemed to find a system that works fairly well for me. And I mean, the process of coming up on people and again, sort of seeing that challenge and a goal of trying to pick someone off and that's something that does sort of drive me during a race.
You mentioned early on that when you started running, it was because you had a group of friends that did, and you just kind of picked it up from them. So were they your source of, I guess, advice as you got into trail and ultra running?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the folks that I kind of, the group that I came into had been running for a number of years, and it was really great to have that experience. So I think I feel pretty lucky about that I didn't have to learn everything from scratch and trial and error and, you know, disasters. I was able to learn from their past experiences and, you know, I think in general, trail runners are very willing to share their experiences and help people grow to be their own trail runners and just in love of the sport and advancement of the sport.
So thinking back to that time when you were having to learn, you know, the difference between road running and trail running, what was the best advice that was given to you?
Enjoy it. I think there's a, for me at least, there's sort of a different mentality when I'm on the trail versus the road. And when I'm out on the trail, I can just enjoy being outside in whatever environment it is. And you can focus on where your feet are landing or focus on what's, you know, going on around you. And I don't get that same experience from the road necessarily. So, you know, they would just say, just get out there and enjoy it. You know, don't worry about your time or don't worry about, you know, X, Y, and Z. Just get out and enjoy being out. And that's what I did. And that's what I've falling in love with trail running.
All right. And so as we kind of wrap up the interview, of course, we got to ask you some of the basic questions that we love to ask everybody. And the first is, are you loyal to a particular shoe or do you kind of spread the love around?
I do spread the love around. Right now, I'm kind of stuck on the Brooks. I think it's called something Grit. I don't remember the exact model, but yeah, it's a Brooks trail shoe. It has a fairly moderate tread, nothing really chunky on it, and pretty flat shoe.
And is there any other piece of gear, like a pack or a bottle or something like that, that you just can't live without?
No, I am searching for the perfect pack right now. I have one that I like, but it's caused me a little chafing lately, so I'm still on the hunt for the perfect pack.
I tell you, I'm anxious to try the new line that Ultimate Direction has and try out some of those with the bottles in the front and then just the light, I guess, spot for a jacket or fuel or whatever you want to put in the back. And those are the ones I'm anxious to try. So that'll be when I get back out there for 100 again, I think I'll be using that. So and then you've done races from East Coast to West Coast. Is there any race in particular that's on your bucket list that you haven't gotten to yet?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think there are lots of bucket list races. You know, all the big tough ones, of course, I would think that I would like to try. I'm not certain, but I've actually been scouring some of these new kind of startup runs and been intrigued by, you know, some in different areas that maybe just are a few years old that aren't going to be quite so crowded and hard to get into.
Have you put your name in for Western yet?
I have not.
So any plans on doing that anytime soon, or is that kind of too big and too much of an event now?
You know, I don't know. I don't want to cross anything off the potential list. I think, you know, I'm pretty game for trying anything once.
And then similar along those lines, we've heard a lot of interesting things about the new Leadville. I'll call the new Leadville with the new ownership. What was your experience like with the new Leadville and some of the issues folks have had with it being too crowded and too commercialized and too much out there?
Right. Well, to be honest with you, I didn't know that there were as many issues as there were until I read an article in Trail Runner magazine. My crew apparently did a very good job of not letting me know what was going on out there around me. So I didn't realize that there were issues with, you know, food at the aid stations or cars stacking up at Winfield. I was just really lucky. So like I said, I had a great experience, but I may have been completely clueless about what was going on.
I know some folks from Arkansas just went out to Hard Rock and completed Hard Rock this year. Is that on your bucket list?
Oh, you just never know. You know, I think I'd like to gain a little more experience before I try to put my name in the hat for something like that. Only having 100 under my belt, but
it seems to check off all the requirements you're looking for.
Yeah. We'll see. I don't know right now.
We appreciate the time, and we look forward to seeing, I guess, what else you have next on the schedule. And I don't think we got to share it with you, but congrats on a great race when we saw you at Lovett. I think you embodied the perfect trail running experience there, of just a great positive attitude and consistent running throughout. And of course, it got you first place female there. So congrats for that. And we would love to have you back next year, should you choose to give the 100K distance a go, or potentially the 100 mile that we're looking at adding to that. So
I heard about that.
We'd love to have you back. So again, thanks for your time, and we look forward to many great things from you.
All right. Thank you so much.
You know, Allison's attitude at racing is kind of the attitude that I would always love to have during a race. The cool as a cucumber, calm, collected, just never seems to be under pressure, and I never seem to actually live up to that standard, but it's at least the typical attitude I'd love to have during races.
Yeah, it was great to talk with Allison and to see what she's been doing and the potential she has to continue that here in Arkansas, and even on the West Coast, she seems to do well in the mountain races. Well, that's all we have for this week. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss a single episode.
And as always, you can reach out to us through various social networks. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/Operation Ultra, Twitter at Operation Ultra, or just throw that hashtag Op Ultra in a tweet. Or you can send us an email, info@OperationUltra.com. As always, we'll have show notes posted on the website at operationultra.com/episode19. Hope you guys wrote all of that down. Well, enjoy this great weather. It doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon, so hopefully you guys have some great running coming up in the near future. And until next time,
happy trails,
and we'll see you next week.